So people coming to see the show, what could they expect?
Oh, well, they can expect to see Star Wars in a way that they've never seen it before, which is one man on stage, no costumes, no sets, no props, no talent, so to speak, flopping around kind of like a dead fish, or not dying fish, let's say, retelling the original trilogy, but, of course, using none of the great things, the special effects that make the film what it is, the great big spectacle. And I'm kind of conjuring Star Wars from the geeky ether and taking us from, you know, the very first film to the end of The Return of the Jedi. So, you know, we fight all the battles. There's all the romance. There's all the monsters, all the characters. I fly the ships. I do everything. But it's just me on stage. So you might not think that this would work, and some people still feel this way. But Lucasfilm really digs it. I'm licensed by Lucasfilm. So this is something that they gave the thumbs up to, and even though it was, you know, Star Wars was never intended to be seen this way, it's the way you're going to see it, and it's Star Wars in a way that you're never ever going to be able to go back and watch Star Wars and view it the same way again, guaranteed.
4, 5, and 6 are a total about 6 hours and about 15, 16, 17 minutes. How are you doing it, and how long is it?
It is 1 hour, so about 20 minutes per film. And how am I doing it? You know, when I actually worked at the computer and tried to sort of just condense it down, I was lucky because my own memory is limited, you know, and I just tried to tell the story, imagining that I met some people who had never seen Star Wars. But instead of using any, you know, sort of saying, and then Luke walked over here, I just used lines from the films as I could remember them, dialogue, and pieced it together. And then sometimes had huge editorial jumps where I'm going from, you know, one moment to half an hour later. But I realized that all that stuff in between wasn't really forwarding the story. It was good fat, but really fat. It wasn't the meat of the story. Right. So it's just condensed down into a way that people can follow the story. Because I think I'm right in saying that most people that come see a show like this have seen Star Wars before. I'm not telling you a story you've never seen. We're just sort of retelling it in a way that kind of gets past the fat and gets back to the meat.
Well, and the Star Wars story itself is the hero classic story, so yeah. It's also kind of a retelling of the old mythology stories.
Absolutely, yeah. It's funny because my director, TJ Daw, great guy, he said to me that it's weird that this is like a bard. These guys would have thousands of stories in their head, and they would retell them as poetry. You know, it'd be like a person that knew a bunch of songs that could just sort of pull out the guitar and, you know, play, you know, CCR, and he'd play whatever. You know, but in this case here, retelling stories that we'd heard before. We already knew how they would come out, but it was the way that they told it that kind of made it special, and that, you know, made the bard a special performer. And for me, that's sort of the same thing. I mean, I don't have 1,000 movies stuck in my head that I'm retelling this way, but I definitely have a lot of Star Wars crammed in my head. And retelling a story that we already know, but in its own unique form. And, you know, it's weird because if you watch the movie Return of the Jedi, there's actually a part where C-3PO, the golden droid, is retelling sort of the adventure up to that point. And in a weird way, I never realized it, but that's sort of what I'm doing. So I guess I stole from Star Wars in a really big way.
Kind of stealing from C-3PO, talking to the Ewoks, and
absolutely,
telling the story of what had happened.
Yeah.
Now, what inspired you to do this?
Oh, boy, inspiration. I could sort of say, be smart about it and say that I was inspired by the fact that I was unemployed at the time, which isn't true. It's not true. It's just that trying to make it as a theater actor is very, very difficult. You have to really go everywhere for the work. And I lived in Canada at the time. And my joke that I made up is that trying to be a successful theater star in Canada is sort of like trying to climb the Rocky Mountains with your lips. It's just not going to happen. So I was going everywhere for the work and, you know, making a living, but not really making any gains. I wasn't really going anywhere. So I kind of wanted to get some control over what I was doing. And the way to do this is to write your own material. I tried a couple different shows that were just based upon my life. And they went all right, but this sort of trying Star Wars as a sort of a lampoon on stage, it went so well. And my experience with Star Wars was such a personal one. And, you know, people that love Star Wars tend to have their personal story about it. But I had a sort of a weird experience with Star Wars, having seen the original film well over 400 times. And that's no lie at all. So doing it on stage that way, it was, you know, the one man, three films, one hour, you know. It was kind of just a perfectly encapsulated novelty. People could sort of pop that little one-man Star Wars pill and go, wow, that's great, you know, and then we can leave. My career was not going anywhere, and this sort of kickstarted it. And oddly enough, I was always plagued by getting typecast as certain types of people. And now I've really typecast myself, because I don't think I've ever had any work offers based upon people coming to see this show. You know, if I get a theater director, they come see this show, and they don't really see what it is I'm doing as an actor. I mean, they might, but it's using skills to do this that it's not Shakespeare. You know, it's not, you know, Arthur Miller. It's not something that they can instantly go, now that's going to be a great Willy Loman. You know, they just sort of go, that's a really crazy, nerdy dude. So, and I'm happy to be that way.
How long have you been doing this?
Oh, God. since 2001. So 13 years now, the one-man Star Wars. I know, I shake my head, too. It's like most people don't go to jail for that long, you know, and they commit bad things. But, you know, I when I started it, I really thought I would do it for the length of a Fringe Festival tour, which is about 3 or 4 months. I thought, well, you know, I'm sure it'll be fine. It'll do all right. But then it'll be done, and I'll move on to different things. But Star Wars has an incredible shelf life. And if I'm evidence of anything, it's Star Wars' shelf life. It's everywhere. And I've had offers, and I've traveled to 4 different continents. I've done the show thousands of times in hundreds of cities all over the world. And it's weird because it's only a one-man show, and the size that it is, it may be due to some of my lack of imagination, but as long as I'm willing to do it and people are willing to see it, well, it's a Reese's peanut butter cup. You know, it's just the combination of people want to see it and I'm willing to do it. I can go anywhere. That's the reason why I've been doing the show for so many years. Mm-hmm. And I've had people ask me, you know, aren't you sick of doing it? But I think of the other sort of possibility. I go to the worst case scenario where I'm just working in some cubicle in an office and driving every day on the same commute, you know, not necessarily feeling all that inspired by my job. And then I think about this and the places I've been able to go to and the commute that I take, which often involves airports going to who knows where. This is a way better office and a way better job than anything I could possibly conceive. And I'm sure I could still find myself eventually working in a cubicle and driving to work, but I don't think so.
Plus, also, it's live. And with live theater, everything changes. And there's never the same show ever. You watch Star Wars once, and Star Wars will always be the same, not including the special edition things that Lucas did. But just Star Wars itself, the movie doesn't change, but your show will change constantly because it's live theater.
Absolutely. Well, and that is just it. Live theater is a living thing. And, you know, I there was a period of time where I think I kind of lost the sense of live theater. There was a weird incubation period in it. It was when I was in New York City and I was doing the show every day for 5.5 months, doing the show off Broadway. And I just thought, I'm in some kind of mad loop. Because, I mean, New York is awesome, but it's not what I grew up in. You know, I live in a nice laid back place. And New York's just, you know, you don't change New York, New York changes you.
Right.
And I was doing the show and I thought, I must be crazy. What am I doing? And at some point, I woke up and I went, I know what I'm doing. I'm doing something amazing. I'm having an amazing experience, an amazing life. And when I broke through to that sort of other side, I realized it's miraculous that somehow this thing exists and that I made it exist.
That's cool.
Yeah. I don't know how it happened. I still don't know how it happened.
You started in 2001. Since that time, Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith has come out, 2002, 2005. Have you thought about doing the prequels?
I have thought about doing the prequels, but here's the thing. The original Star Wars trilogy, I watched it. I think I came by it pretty honestly. Everybody did at the time because it was like New York. It happened to us.
Right.
We didn't happen to it. And it... maybe it doesn't even make any sense, but whatever. You know, I watched the films. I was a kid. I don't think I had a huge capacity for critical thought, you know, and that's a wonderful place to be when you can love something unabashedly just because you do. It's like music sometimes. You don't necessarily have to overthink it. You just like it. Right. And I kind of feel like I've become, like anyone else, somewhat jaded. And it's sad. It's hard to watch a film now and just sort of love it for its merits, even for the things that don't work in it. Just
like
love it.
Like we could when we were kids.
Absolutely. And I mean, my nephews, they love the new films. Mm-hmm. They don't look at it with some strange critical eye or look sort of wistfully back at the old films and go, why couldn't it be like that? You know, they don't care. They just love it for its merits. And that's a wonderfully free place to be. So for me, because of my own experience of watching the new films, because I don't feel the same way, because there's an 8-year-old that's inside there that I really am bringing out, that inner eight-year-old who's up on stage doing the show. I feel like I'd just be like some bitter 40-year-old guy up on stage slinging crap at
Jar Jar Binks.
And it's like, well, no one wants to go see some 40-year-old guy complain about Jar Jar Binks. Who cares? You know, just get past it. Get on to something else. When you come to see my one-man Star Wars or my one-man Lord of the Rings, I am celebrating the love. I am poking fun, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But not in a way that's mean-spirited. It's in the way that you could poke fun at a beloved relative that does something that might annoy you at times, and you sort of, you know, poke fun at them. But it's because you love them, and you can't imagine your life without it. That's how I feel about the old films. The new films, yeah, I guess it's just my own fault for getting older that I can't see them the same way.
Which leads into Star Wars is doing the revisit now with Disney. There's a new show coming out this fall and the new movie coming out next December. What are your thoughts about this return to Star Wars coming up?
Well, I mean, it's so strange because everything is so it's so broadcast. It's so public. It's almost impossible to think that anything could happen in these that would be sort of not documented, not broadcast, not, you know, but they'll make a documentary about every single thing. It's a strange thing about J.J. Abrams, though. That guy seems to be able to work. It must be his team, maybe the environment they create, but they seem to be able to isolate themselves and work creatively. So that's extremely exciting. From what I understand, they have sort of a creative team that are sort of creating the new official history, or I guess the future history of Star Wars. So whatever has been created as fan fiction is no longer what they call canon. It is no longer the Lucasfilm thing. It's fan fiction is what it is. So they're creating a new actual official story. And once again, that's extremely exciting. And when I think about Disney, my God, all of my memories as a kid, and we used to, I'm not sure if it was the same in the States, but I grew up in Canada, and we had something called The Wonderful World of Disney, and it was on Sunday nights. And it was something that we anticipated all week long. Primetime Disney television. It couldn't get any better. And when I think about something like The Pirates of the Caribbean, I mean, they took a ride, and they made a ride into a series of fantastic films. You know, Gore Verbinski just, you know, knocked it out of the park. Right. They created something that was wonderful and unique and was just fun. So of all the people that could be stewards, that could make new Star Wars. And I mean, I don't care about what happens to me, you know, in the world of, you know, there's the great powers that be, you know, and I'm a grub. You know, these people are the top predators. There's something where you look at it and I'm sort of in awe of the whole thing. And of course I can't wait. I'm waiting like the rest of the world to see what comes up as an offer. And I hope that it's going to be fantastic. But I have absolutely no hand in making it happen. So I'm just like every other schlub. I'll be standing in line.
Waiting to watch.
Yep.
Do you have a favorite character in this?
The Emperor, absolutely.
Really? Yeah. Okay, I thought maybe Yoda or the Emperor. Why is the Emperor your favorite?
Well, the Emperor, clearly here's a guy that's, he looked over all of Yoda's sort of, you know, wisdom and just said, screw it, that's not for me. I think a villain is really the best thing. The reason why I like the Emperor is, I mean, he is the most extreme. He's the antithesis, you could say, to Luke.
Right.
Right. You know, especially Luke at the beginning, utterly innocent, you know, a little whiny jerk, you know, and just...
I had to go to the taxi station to pick up some power converters.
Exactly. Yeah, well, I mean, as white and as blonde and as sun-bleached, as desert-dwelling he is, you have the emperor who is covered in, you know, these dark robes, darkness, has nothing but cynical thoughts. He has a mind that's like a machine, and all these pieces are moving. It's just absolutely the opposite, completely controlling. And that, I mean, that's the nerd, of course, talking there, but I just love the fact that he's just an unabashed jerk, an absolutely horrible, horrible man. And I used to love Luke when I was a kid. He's the one I identified with. You know, I wanted to be Luke Skywalker. I couldn't figure out why he couldn't get a girl, but all that there, still, I wanted to be Luke. I loved all the things that Luke did because he eventually had this great change where he became more cynical. He's wearing dark clothing. He's walking around with a lightsaber and stuff. He loses his hands. He's totally fine. I liked that story arc, but the Emperor, as far as there being a person to portray, to perform on stage, he's Shakespearean. He's a Shakespearean actor, but I mean, it's just that he takes this text and takes it up a notch. When he's on the screen, everybody else disappears. Right. You know, he's just taking everything to a totally different level. And for me, trying to be something on stage, yes, it's great to be Yoda, but I can't do a very good Yoda impression. But the Emperor, I can do just fine.
That's a good one to do. Yeah. Now, I got to ask you, you said you'd also do Lord of the Rings.
Right.
Will we maybe see that coming in tour sometime?
I hope so. I mean, this is the nice thing about Star Wars, is that I can do the one-man Star Wars, and I can sort of educate people as to what type of thing they're going to see, because it's kind of weird, like, what's a one-man Star Wars trilogy? Some people are going to go the other direction. People don't like one-man shows. But once they understand what the style the show is, what I'm trying to do, well, people know Star Wars, they know Lord of the Rings, and there's always more fans than you think out there. And people that know their Star Wars and know their Lord of the Rings, they know it very well. Right. So, I guess you could say that if this is the hors d'oeuvre plate, you know, I'm not saying the Lord of the Rings is the main, but this definitely whets your appetite. Mm. It sort of clarifies the palate so you know what you're getting. And for me, Lord of the Rings, I read the books when I was a kid.
That's what I was wondering. Is this the Peter Jackson version?
It is. Okay. Or the Ralph Bakshi?
No. No, we're not doing that. But, that would be terrible. This is definitely the Peter Jackson. Oh, God, those things were awful.
Yes.
Yeah, that's why it's the geek in me asking.
If you want evidence of drug use in the 70s, that is it. Absolutely. Fritz the Cat presents Lord of the Rings.
Yes, it was.
Oh, God. Anyway, there's a reason why they didn't create a second half of it.
It was not a second one. It was just the first one.
Died in Helm's Deep and everything dead. Yeah, horrible. The new ones, definitely. And it's informed by my literary background. I mean, I read them to death. Read this, you know, Silmarillion and obviously The Hobbit and all the extended stuff I could find that was still interesting that helped to flesh out that world. And yet came to the films in the same way as I came to Star Wars, sitting at a computer, using what I could remember, using that to inform myself. Having had the experience of doing one-man Star Wars and sort of trusting that the people will be able to follow huge jumps, because people don't tend to remember all the little things in between. And there's a lot of fat, in the best way possible, in Lord of the Rings. But the iconic moments, they really stick out. And for myself, I could watch every single moment happily, greedily, you know. But I don't think everybody else is quite as audaciously nerdy as I am.
Well, the extended version of that one is 11 hours. So that does take a while to watch. Have you ever thought about doing any other shows?
Mm-hmm. A lot of times, yeah. It is strange. You might have heard, I had been talking previously about the idea of franchises, the way movies are made today versus the way things were even 10 years ago. Lord of the Rings was made in New Zealand and made, you could almost say, outside the Hollywood zone, and made by a person that... Like Lucas, was isolated creatively and chose to kind of knock the system. He went back to models because of what he loved, you know, the old sort of King Kong type sort of models, that sort of thing. Anyway, just going back to some models, still using CGI, creating new technology that's used to death now, but being sort of creating his own machine, you know, building it from the ground up. Things don't happen that way anymore. People don't, I mean, Peter Jackson and all those people made those films from the ground up. George Lucas, conceivably, and everybody else that was on board, made those films from the ground up. It's theirs. Nobody does that anymore. Nobody. I think J.J. Abrams might do that with sort of, he had done that with some television and managed to get some people behind them. But things are always canceled because people won't see things through to the end. If there's one, look at something like The Shawshank Redemption, flopped, mm-hmm. and yet it's in the top 10 of almost everybody's top 10, you know, top 100 films, yeah. and yet it flopped utterly. Now, that would be viewed as a failure if it didn't do well, maybe in video sales, or if it hadn't been critically acclaimed. And that's really what things come down to now. They've always been about money. They always have. And I don't think that I'm stupid enough to think that they've been about really telling stories. If they tell a story that's good and people tend to like it, that's a bonus. It's about making money. And it'd be something I'd love to be part of. But every once in a while, you get something that manages to sneak through and gets some people on board. So, I'd love to be able to do another show that was similar, but I'd have to go back to being dazzled mm-hmm. by something that I didn't know I was going to be dazzled by. And that either requires somebody else to do the work or I have to do the work myself. So I don't know. We'll see.
I think you and I could probably sit here and talk forever. Is there anything else you'd like to mention that we didn't go over?
I don't think so. I mean, it's a strange thing to do a show like this and to have the opportunity that I've had to be part of Star Wars. You know, I never in my wildest nerdy dream would I have ever thought that I'd have a chance to, in some small way, be part of Star Wars. I'm not part of the films. I'm not really part of anything. I'm just a licensed guy that does Star Wars, celebrates Star Wars on stage with other people. And, you know, I never knew how the future would work out, you know, after that sort of first night I ever tried doing it. And I will never look back, in spite of whatever might happen in the future, I will never look back with regret. It's been just an absolute trip. And sometimes you just have to stick to your guns with something that just seems silly, because it might work out. And Star Wars, the original, A New Hope, everybody knew it was going to be a flop. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew it was going to be a failure. And everybody was proved wrong.